but it's a proposal. Okay. Now you can help shape it into a policy. That's how the legislative process is supposed to work. But I think we're so accustomed maybe to the lack of debate in places like Congress that it seems unusual. And actually, we've done it a number of times on a number of topics in this council over the last couple of years where we put something on the table and start a public discussion. That's what we're doing today. That's why when someone said next week when we act on this, I started waving my arms. Well,
we're not going to
adopt the current proposal. It's just a starting point. So again, apologies if DRAC hasn't felt included. But this isn't about development review. It's about taxing demolition before development occurs. Well, so I appreciate that the DRAC worked on the previous changes to our demolition delay requirements. And I appreciate that effort. Obviously, it hasn't been sufficient, and you recognize that as well. So, again, everyone, I hope everyone can just take a deep breath and say, oh, this is an idea. What do we do with it, rather than worrying about how much or how little public process has occurred before today? It begins here.
Right, and I totally agree with you. And if it came across as something else, I apologize. But I believe that this needs to be looked at, but it needs to be looked at in a more in-depth kind of fashion and cross bureaus. And when you speak to it being a revenue proposal and not development review, DRAC's going to, and Commissioner Saltzman left, so I can't speak on his behalf, but has agreed to have DRAC subcommittee look at cumulative fees, whether it's from PBOT, BES, BDS, because they could argue this is a BDS fee, or I mean a BES fee, or this is a Water Bureau fee. That all affects development, and this tax or fee or charge or whatever it ends up being is going to affect development, and it's going to affect housing. So the Portland Housing Bureau needs to be involved in this, and so that's my point, is I don't think it's just one bureau that needs to look at this. It needs to be a stakeholder group like we had, and my experience was the demo.
Chair Kincaid, my understanding is your next DRAC meeting is tomorrow.
Correct.
So is it your hope that there's some further presentation tomorrow on this concept, or is this something you intend to schedule for next month's meeting?
I wouldn't expect anybody. I mean, if someone wants to, we could probably shift the agenda around. But we have a full agenda, so November is fine. Even a special meeting, because there's many DRAC members that are extremely interested in this topic.
Good. Thank you. Mr. Spencer Hartle.
Mayor, Commissioners, my name is Brandon Spencer Hartle. I'm here today representing Restore Oregon, 1130 Southwest Morrison Street. I'm here to support the concept and the leadership provided by the mayor in hopes that the rest of the commission can build the right proposal. There are many reasons to advance a disincentive for the demolition of single-family houses and the replacement of housing options that don't meet our community's needs. I wanted to list off a couple of reasons why we might consider this disincentive. One, rehabilitation of existing buildings per dollar spent generates more jobs than new construction. Two, every house demolished sends 58,000 pounds of waste to the landfill, and only 9% of replacement projects on the sites of single-family houses provide multifamily housing. Three, new houses are obviously and inherently more expensive than existing houses. And four, neighborhoods often oppose the scale and massing of new houses. In my estimation, the demolition tax should be structured to reward good behavior. This can be accomplished by inclusion of a small menu of options that would provide for partial rebates, the combination of which may get the $25,000 tax to zero. The four partial rebates that I'd like the council to consider today would be rebates for full deconstruction, and in doing full deconstruction, we would solve for the hazardous materials concerns that neighbors have. Two, a rebate for affordable housing. Three, a rebate for multifamily housing. And by multifamily housing, I don't mean two new houses, but I mean housing that is multifamily in its nature. And four, and I think one of the things that has come up by UNR's comments, is a partial or full rebate for a neighborhood association waiver for those situations where you may have a neighborhood association board who would like to see a house replaced or who have had positive interactions with a developer who's proposing something better for their neighborhood. Additionally, I believe the proposed tax should apply to all residential structures in all residential zones, which is what your Title 24 demolition ordinance covers. So this would be a broader application of the proposal than what is in the language that the mayor's office has proposed, and this can be found in Title 2455-200, and I will stop there.
Can I just ask you, since you're suggesting a broader application and a bigger menu of exemptions, where do you come down on the dollar amount?
I don't.
No,
and I don't know if 25 is the right number or 35 is the right number, but my thinking is that in offering partial rebates, you could incentivize multiple tiers of good behavior. Deconstruction would be one of those, affordable housing could be one, and for those projects that are on transit corridors or in multifamily zones, you could accommodate some of the concerns about density through having that type of rebate.
Can I just ask you, why do you have more confidence in terms of the asbestos and hazardous material concern with a deconstruction rather than a demolition? Couldn't there be a deconstruction that is just as irresponsible as a demolition in terms of how to handle hazardous materials?
That's a really good question. I serve on the Deconstruction Advisory Group, and Sean Wood from Bureau of Planning and Sustainability is here who could talk further about that. But one of the core pieces of our conversation is by the delicate nature of deconstruction as opposed to mechanical demolition, you would be proactively able to identify where a host of hazardous materials are located in a house and abate those as you came across them rather than sort of accidentally or inadvertently not noticing lead or mercury or asbestos through the backhoe.
Thank you. Oh, welcome.
Mayor Hales, commissioners, for the record, my name is Paul Grove. I'm with the HBA of Metro Portland. I submitted written testimony on behalf of the organization. I will do my best to not read it. As noted in the testimony, the HBA of Metro Portland is not supportive of the proposal, and I've outlined a series of policy issues that are problematic.
I'm sorry, I don't think I have a copy. Have you got copies of that, Carla?
It was emailed to us last night.
Emailed. Okay, sorry. Go ahead, please. I'll get it later.
My apologies. We can follow up with that accordingly. So, again, there are a host of policy considerations that we've identified and outlined in the testimony. The first is around affordability. It's been discussed a little bit today. We've talked about folks building at the SDC waiver line and having to carry that cost and what that looks like, and does that become a burden for those folks like Habitat and others, you know, who are doing this type of work. They're increasingly few in this space, and you will likely hear more about that, but that is something that we outlined. We also outlined the affordability piece around those building in and around the median home value, to the point that Commissioner Fish made earlier. If we're looking at some homes in outer southeast, a new home that might not be technically derelict but is deficient might be replaced with a reasonable, affordable home, and a $350,000 home is something that the neighbor, I think, would want and approve. And frankly, looking at a $25,000 tax, the prospect or the calculation looks different for a family in terms of what it can and can't afford. The second item that we noted was around energy efficiency and sustainability. A number of homes that are torn down are frankly energy inefficient and are replaced with newer homes that reduce the residential carbon footprint. I think this is a desirable objective at the end of the day. And so rather than penalize that, I think we should be trying to reward and incent that. The third piece that we outlined in the testimony was around equity. I think an unfortunate consequence of the proposal is around those existing property owners, if they choose to potentially tear down and rebuild and be in an owner-occupied home, are they subject to that tax? Also, those residents, longtime Portland residents, that have been in the city and have weathered the tough times, and now are looking at their nest egg, what does that look like for them? Are they going to potentially take a hit on what that property value may be? The fifth item that we outlined was around accountability, and it's been discussed a bit today in terms of some of the outstanding issues with respect to the administration, what this looks like, technical pieces, et cetera. I don't want to belabor the point. It's been discussed a little bit today, but those are the highlights of the testimony that we presented on behalf of the HBA, and I will stop there. Thank you.
Sir, and I apologize that I don't have your letter in front of me, but if you email that, I'll look for it.
Certainly.
Does your submission outline the potential, what HBA believes to be the legal defects of a demolition tax approach?
Mayor Hales, Commissioner Fish, I appreciate that.
Actually, you don't have to do that here. You do that in Salem. You don't have to go through that extra.
Old habits. You know, that letter was submitted by John Chandler, CEO of the State Association. It's on their behalf, and that was submitted. So I don't have any additional detail to provide to you other than what Mr. Chandler submitted to.
So all I would say is that if HBA, regional, state, believes that this approach is illegal because somehow it's either preempted or conflicts with state law or whatever, I would urge you to submit that argument in writing so that we can evaluate it. I think that would be helpful. And the second just comment is, in light of the concern that you've raised about affordability, do you support exempting demolitions below a certain house value?
Commissioner Fish, I appreciate the question. At this point in time, I think as we evaluate the options, we have to put all things on the table, what that looks like. If it looks like an upfront exemption, if it looks like a rebate, or if the policy as it's ultimately structured, and we take and heed the counsel of others who have wanted to pump the brakes, slow down and look at this in greater detail, maybe a tax is not necessary. So I would suggest that at this point in time, I'm not in a position to support anything. Frankly, the association is not supportive of a tax on demolitions.
So I get that. And as since the mayor has said we're going to be reviewing this, and this is just the beginning of the process, I would benefit from additional feedback from your organization about how to address affordability, because I think everyone acknowledges that someone in Outer East that wants to demolish a $150,000 home and replace it with a home that a middle-class family can afford is in a different category of someone who, in my neighborhood, is taking a perfectly nice bungalow that is in the $300,000 to $400,000 range and replacing it with an $800,000 house that very few people can afford. And so if in your analysis, reserving your right to object to the whole exercise, you think that an exemption at the front end helps address the affordability, I would like to hear more about that.
Another subject that I mentioned earlier to Mr. McAuliffe that we could use your advice on, I suspect your advice about the dollar amount will probably not be all that helpful because I already know what it is, but I'm teasing. But here's one where we really could use your help, and that is this this issue of what constitutes a derelict house. I threw out that challenge to Mr. McAuliffe as well. We've got to figure out, if we're going to do this, we've got to figure out how do we draw that line and how do we define that situation in code where the house is too far gone to keep and where no one in particular would, where no reasonable person, in my opinion, would want to stand in the way of its demolition. Where, how do we draw that line in code other than a judgment call or an inspection? Or how do we do that? So that is an open question in my mind about this ordinance as it now stands. We've pegged it to the hearings officer and the Bureau's determination and the code provisions that underlie that. I'm not sure if that's the right way to do it or not. So your members' help in being able to codify a reasonable call on what is a house that is too far gone to keep would be very helpful.
I appreciate all three of you and indeed the previous six speakers. I also, Mary Helen, was not aware that this was more like a work session than a final hearing. Neither was my chief of staff. So I'm really grateful to know that each of you is engaged, and I hope that there will be a task force or some forum set up so that these issues can be thought through and a more I don't think we're going to get to complete consensus on this, as we don't on most issues, but it would be good to have a proposal that's had each of your input in, and I appreciate your willingness to do that.
Just can I interject something about what you were saying, derelict houses? And I mentioned Mike Molinaro and this project he's done. He spent 16 months. He's an architect. He's got it completely mapped out for Sunnyside and half a King neighborhood, pictures of every house, Zillow, those kinds of things, and there's standards for derelict, there's standards for different levels. And so in this sort of proposal that's in its infancy but sort of 16 months down the road, he's got proposals for how to make those judgments, peer review, architect, city staff, structural engineer, utilizing some of the students in Portland State or architectural firms. So there are some great ideas out there. We just need time to get them together, you know, he has his 50-minute slideshow, so anytime you or any of your staff want to see it, he's more than willing to show somebody. But he's made great progress, and so it would answer some of that. And then just quickly, because it wouldn't be me if I didn't have a quote for you, and I'm probably going to murder this because I don't have it written down, but Stephen Hawken from Smith & Hawkins, who's now out doing ecological, environmental things, he said, good management is when you identify a problem that is so interesting everyone wants to get on board to help. And so I think this describes this whole process. So I thank all of you for that.
So the challenge might be that in Sunnyside it may be possible to take pictures of every home. Centennial, I think, has over 10,000 homes. And similarly, some other neighborhoods in our community don't have the capacity to do that. So what we're looking at is, can we tailor something that may not be one size fits all?
Yes, some answers to that, too.
Thank you.
Carrie Helen, before you leave, George Brett lives. Go Royals.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, let's take the next folks, please.
Are Jerry Johnson, Dan Franks, and Eric Thompson. And they will be followed by Steve Messinetti, Justin Wood, and Fred Leeson.
Welcome. Good afternoon.
Hi, Mayor Hills, members of the commission. My name is Jerry Johnson with Johnson Economics, 621 Southwest Alder, Suite 605, Portland, Oregon. This is an odd thing for me to be doing because I'm basically speaking on housing policy, which I care a great deal about. I'm going to be speaking to the text I was given, which I now understand is probably in flux. But I think some of the issues are broad enough that they'll be useful. When you get into issues of affordability, and affordability is an issue I think I care about as well as much most people do, it's really hard to come up with solutions that where you don't get unintended consequences. And I think the way this is currently structured, there's a lot of potential for that. First of all, the timing and burden of the rebate thing, I'm really sort of troubled by this, looking at this, how it happens. There's a lot of small builders, even builders who can get rebates. It doesn't say how long they're holding their money. And if you're a small nonprofit doing a duplex, you're theoretically under this language going to get a rebate for your whole, less maybe an administrative fee. But they're basically someone's parking on your money for an unspecified number of months or years or whatever it is, and I think that's a potential hardship. I think it's going to be really important how that's structured, what the impact is going to be. I do think one of the things you always need to understand when you do housing policy, particularly when you're doing a tax or a charge, is you know who you charge it to. In economics, there's an issue called incidence, which is sort of a subspecialty, which is who pays it. We know who we charge. But if you're a developer and you're charged a $25,000 fee for a demolition, you're either trying to push it to the market or you're trying to take it off the property value, one or the other. Robert, who I'm proud to say is actually my represents my neighborhood, got it right. It's this whole income elasticity, a price elasticity of demand, which is who has the power to push that pricing, which way it goes. But in most cases, it sort of goes both directions. It has a bit of an inflationary price on housing, and it has a deflationary price on property values of the existing housing. That can slow down redevelopment, which maybe is some of the things. I do actually also want to advocate for move away from a flat fee. I think it's really got a regressive impact. I think it's going to disproportionately cause some hardships in some of the lower-income neighborhoods that have lower supportable pricing. Same time, if it's a $25,000 fee on a million-dollar home in Eastmoreland, that's 2.5%. That's really not of any consequence. I guess my time's up, so.
All right, thank you very much. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Daniel Franks, a member of the Northeast neighborhood, and I just want to put a little input in. I'm a member of King neighborhood for about the last 40 years, and I lived in Boise. And I've seen a lot of things grow in the neighborhood that's been good from the development. Because I can remember when we go to Mississippi and was one person on Mississippi Avenue. So I don't want to see just the brakes put on the development. It's good to think of the small people, and I'm one of them. So I don't mean to say that. But $25,000 on the one hand is going to hurt some of the people that's fairly small when they try to turn their investment. And I'm speaking of my neighbor, I won't mention his name, but he's 80 years old. he was thinking of retiring, and then he got just a little house. And I think in those scenarios, it's a pretty good idea that he's been in the neighborhood that long and can cash in on it. After all of the things that he'd been through for 80 years. And he's got a fairly decent offer, and he's entertaining it. And I think if he'd come into $25,000 less, he probably would miss a year's income because he's on a fixed income. Myself, I'm disabled, so I don't have a modest income myself, and $25,000 means a lot to me as well. But I do appreciate the fact that the thought is going to the process of helping underprivileged people find a place, and the thought also keeping the price down. Everybody wants the price down, sure enough, so we're trying to accomplish the same objective, just more like how do we do it. And I agree with most people, if we do $25,000, who pick up the $25,000? Because what has happened over the years were, where we were, it was nobody over there to actually invest. We finally got people to invest, so I would hate to run them off. That's my feeling about the investment in my area. So I hope we come up with a plan that is pleasing to everybody as opposed to just saying, stab you and I get mine and I run. That's my 2 minutes.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Thank you, Mayor, City Commissioners. My name is Eric Thompson. I'm a Portland resident. I also own a small business that specializes in infill single-family construction here in Portland. We use local contractors and suppliers. We support the local economy, and I believe that we truly improve the city's neighborhoods one house at a time. While I think we can all agree that Portland, like most West Coast cities and really a lot of different areas throughout the country, has an affordable housing issue, I believe the proposed demolition tax is a solution that is looking for a problem. And it doesn't necessarily address affordability here in Portland at all. Let me kind of share with you some numbers as to why I believe this. If we use $350,000 as a top-end price for an affordable house, one that maybe a family can purchase, maybe rehab and fix up, there were 6,330 such houses bought and sold in Portland over the last 12 months. Of those 6,000-plus houses, 174 were accompanied with a demo permit. And out of those 174 demo permits, only 75 were for a one-to-one replacement, which is what we've been talking about with the edited version of the proposal today. The rest were to be replaced by two or more houses, which is 100% aligned with the city's stated density goals as part of the broader metro population growth. And so finally, if you take a look at these 75 one-to-one demo permits out of 6,000-plus houses that we can call affordable that were purchased last year, only 30 were for houses that had an appraised value of more than $125,000. This is important because while some houses have been demoed over the past few years that could be deemed habitable, the vast majority, as evidenced by their low appraised values, were often vacant, derelict, rundown eyesores that were the blight of otherwise thriving neighborhoods. In reality, these houses were at the end of their useful life cycle. At the current rate of demos, it'll take 500 years to replace the city's entire housing stock. And I'd like to point out that the real estate market is incredibly efficient. It's very safe to say that if there's any inherent value in a house, that a rehabber or a family will pay more for that house than me as somebody who's going to redevelop it and demo it can afford to pay. As an interesting aside, I demoed one of these houses a few years ago in Westmoreland. I replaced it with a new home, and this is an example of the one-to-one demo that we're talking about. In speaking about the proposed demo tax with my clients, they owned the house at the time. They had me tear it down, build them a new home. They told me not a week goes by when they don't receive a compliment about how great the house is and how it has improved the neighborhood. And then they recounted a story of a few years back when they said, Mayor Hales, you were campaigning door-to-door, you were on their front porch, and you indicated to them that this was a great example of the type of infill housing that the city needs. That's the exact type of housing right now that we're proposing a $25,000 demo tax on.
Very much. Thank you. Thank you all. Okay, next.
Next three are Steve Messinetti, Justin Wood, and Fred Leeson. And they'll be followed by Cliff Goldman, Alyssa Eisenstein-Kruger, and Lightning.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. Thank you. I'm Steve Messinetti, Executive Director of Habitat for Humanity. And I, too, applaud really all of your efforts this year toward creating more opportunities for affordable housing and the production of affordable housing. And I was going to say that I was also very pleased with the focus of these funds on affordable home ownership, the most unfunded aspect of the housing spectrum. I was less pleased with the amendment to take that allocation and have this be a more broad funding source. And so I do ask for continued reflection on the specific use of these funds. But my main concern with this proposal was, as I mentioned some already, the unintended consequences related to the structure of the rebate. Right now, this is structured such that a developer such as Habitat for Humanity or another small developer, Fish Construction, that is working hard to create an end product that is affordable to a family here would have to actually upfront that $25,000. And our typical project, we would have a house that we take down. It might be 3 or 4 years before we have subdivided, gotten through the development process, and built the replacement home or homes on that site and then sold it to the next family. So that burden of coming up with those additional funds up front, carrying those costs, and then getting, even if it's all of those funds back at the end, would be a significant burden. And I don't think it's necessary. So I really recommend looking at that rebate turning back into an exemption, which is really how the SDC program is set up. There's already an administrative process for that. It's a simple process that we make the commitment to build affordable units and sell those homes to low-income families. If we don't meet that commitment, there's a lien on that property, and we have to pay interest on that at the end of the day. So there's not really an additional process needed if we just follow those SDC rules that are in place. So again, appreciate further consideration, especially of that rebate issue.
Appreciate Thanks. Your help in the next phase as well.
Great.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. My name is Justin Wood. I'm an owner of Fish Construction Northwest. We are an infill builder in Portland and have been doing it for 40-plus years. I'm here to express my concerns with the proposed demolition tax and my opposition to it. First, I do just want to reference two earlier documents that were called to the council's attention. One is a letter from the OHBA calling it a legality of the tax. I would be in the camp that does believe that to be an illegal excise tax. I was actually glad to hear it referred to as an excise tax because while it is technically being referred to as a tax on the demolition, it's been pretty clear from everybody who's talked about it that the goal is to prevent the construction of newer, larger houses in its place. So I think the argument can be made that it is to prevent development, and it's not necessarily on the demolition of the house. Also, as a DRAC member, while again it is referenced as a revenue issue, I think there's a lot of broad support across DRAC, both from neighborhoods, deconstruction people, developers alike, and I would like to see the DRAC get a chance to participate in this process because we were pretty disappointed on that. If the tax does move forward, I am supportive of it only being on the one-for-one. If for a lot of people in the room who may not know and who haven't been through the metro growth processes, the city of Portland is planning to add over 120,000 housing units in the next 20 years. And while only 10% of that is predicted to be single family, that is still 12,000 new single family homes are being projected for the city, and that can't happen without some levels of demolition. Lastly, as Steve mentioned earlier, I do think the affordability carve-out, if the tax move forward, is a good idea. However, rather than just having us pay it up front and getting it reimbursed, that has a direct impact on our ability to bring a product to market. I think, as Commissioner Fish suggested, the council should consider a floor where they just exempt, potentially use an improved value on the assessed value on the improvements of the property and consider that for the basis of an exemption rather than just across the board. Just lastly, I would like to mention that I think it's important that the City Council and the neighborhood associations and UNR and everybody have a bigger picture discussion rather than the demolitions and how it fits into the whole process. We have a comp plan, we have the tree code, we have the design standards, and we have demolitions. All of these are impacted by the homes that are going to be built here in the next 20,000 years, and I think when we look at these things as just one part of the bigger puzzle, we're not doing a good job of trying to figure out the whole policy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Fred Leeson, the Architectural Heritage Center, speaking on behalf of our advocacy committee that generally supported the idea of a demolition tax as a first step. We would love to see that paired with incentives. Some of the ones that Restore Oregon mentioned, I think, make a whole lot of sense, and we would love to work on that with you. We were deeply concerned about the modifications. We think the two-for-one is going in the wrong direction. If the issue is demolitions, that's just going to promote it. We would welcome the idea, if you're going to exempt the two-for-one, that only occur if it's for affordable housing. We really liked the idea in the original plan of the, instead of the flat fee, was it the older the house, the more you paid, because that's an incentive for preservation. So that's, and we were sorry to see that taken out, because we think that's, we think that speaks to preservation. Mayor Hales, I think why you got some pushback about this today is usually all of these things come from the bottom up. And this is one of the first time, and it's a wonderful experience to come down and talk to the city council first time out of the box. But I think that's the piece that people had difficulty understanding. We really like to see this process move forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thank you all.
Next three are Cliff Goldman, Alyssa Eisenstein-Kruger, and Lightning. And they'll be followed by Steve Elder, Jess Larson, and Shelley Euler.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Hi. I'm Cliff Goldman, and Mayor Hales and members of the commission, thank you for letting me speak here today. And thank you, Mayor Hales, for showing up at the Bowman Orchard Neighborhood Association meeting and explaining this. I wrote a letter to the editor about this as a response to the Oregonians saying that this is a lousy idea, tear down tax is punitive and counterproductive, but they did say that there is going to be a residential infill stakeholder advisory committee. And I think that's great to change some zoning so we can stop this. Now, I live on Northeast Skidmore Street, where two McMansions were recently completed, one of them occupied by one individual and the other by a family of four. They went for $670,000 each. The two McMansions farther down the block and closer to Northeast 42nd are nearing completion and will be going for $900,000 each. Houses on Skidmore between Northeast 42nd and Northeast 47th are valued at $350,000 to $400,000. Not only are the newly constructed houses architecturally incompatible with all other houses on the street, but they're contributing to the increase of the unaffordability of Portland housing. Zoning changes are needed to stop this epidemic. This is the mission of the committee, of the stakeholders committee. That's great. Taxing developers on a teardown is just one tool being used to disincentivize developers from thoughtless construction. Now, since that letter to the editor appeared in the Oregonian, there's this idea of rebates came up, and property owners could collect rebates for building multiple units or affordable housing and various other categories. Unfortunately, the rebate would be granted to a developer who is going to replace a one structure and replace with two larger, more expensive McMansions. Thus, no distinct disincentive for the current destruction derby. Perhaps an idea would be to grant the rebate to the developer who will replace the demolished home adhering to the height, width, and setbacks that are compatible with the neighborhood and what the Residential Infill Stakeholder Advisory Committee will be advising to do as to preserve the architectural integrity and affordability of the neighborhood. So that would be something positive and an incentive to not replace it with what is largely being replaced, and that's large. Thank you for listening.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks very much. Welcome.
Hi. My name is Alyssa Eisenstein-Kruger, and I have been a real estate broker in Portland since 2007. I work almost exclusively with clients looking to buy or sell in close-in Portland, which at this point in time means anything west of 205. I support UNR's proposal of a flat $35,000 fee. As a real estate broker, I see firsthand the market determining the price of housing, not the developers. Developers price their homes at the top end and then reduce prices until they snag a buyer. Most new construction goes through at least one price reduction while it is on the market, and as a whole, they linger on the market for a longer time than the existing stock of homes. Single-family homes, particularly those under $400,000, are much less likely to see price reductions, and if they are in a desirable micro-location, they don't stay on the market for long. To the developers who respond that adding a demolition fee onto the price of homes will only increase the cost to a buyer, that is only true if a buyer is willing to pay what a developer is asking. No buyer is ever forced into paying more for a home than they feel it is worth or that they can afford. We are seeing a crisis in affordability along the continuum of housing here in Portland. Rents are increasing at an astronomical pace, and the only way a family or individual can guarantee that their housing costs do not increase and price them out is through homeownership. For a family of four earning 100% of the median family income of $73,900, they are most likely going to be looking for a home in the under $350 price range. Finding a home under $350 in central neighborhoods of Portland is difficult, and it is almost next to impossible for a family wanting a three-bedroom home within 3 miles of the downtown core. For homes under $350K that have the misfortune of sitting on more than one historic lot, families looking to stave off displacement and buy a home are already competing with developers who come in with cash and offer quick closings. The new proposal you have for the demolition tax will only incentivize the demolition of affordable single-family homes in the name of density for wealthier individuals and families. Increasing density at the expense of losing our homes that are affordable to families earning up to 120% of the median family income is backwards. No developer is going to demolish an affordable single-family home and then build two more affordable homes. That doesn't pencil out for them. And the only way it does pencil out is to replace that one affordable home with two or more homes unaffordable to families often making over 200% of MFI. What we should be looking more at is ways of incentivizing the preservation of single-family homes, particularly the smaller and more affordable ones, not debating how to appease developers looking to line their pockets on the backs of longtime residents of Portland who merely want to buy a home, plant roots, and stay in their communities.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Lightning, welcome.
Yes, my name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Watchdog PDX. I absolutely oppose this demolition tax. And the numbers that are being thrown out of $25,000 to $35,000, to me that's outrageous. Another issue I have is that if this is approved in any way, this number needs to be dropped down drastically. I would also recommend that that amount be paid upon the sale of the house after it's been developed, not upfront fees. It'll still be directed to the Housing Investment Fund. And another issue I have is that when we're talking real estate brokers here is that if you attach a $35,000 demolition tax up front to the developer, as a buyer stepping up to the table, the first thing I would do is look at the real estate broker and say, I'm going to drop your fee down for supporting this tax and take it off the realtor's fee. Because we want to have more houses developed, okay? We have a housing shortage. So we need to be focusing on possibly more the urban growth boundary, number one, to get more land so these developers aren't scrambling and trying to do more projects on very limited property. Or again, talking affordable housing, which I mentioned to Commissioner Salzman, let's start talking about an affordable housing bond again, such as they did in San Francisco with Mayor Ed Lee. And let's start doing things that are a little bit more productive instead of trying to stall the developers from building more housing when we know we have a housing shortage. And if you want to buy the house before they get to it, we'll buy it. It's a free market system. You have a right to work with the realtors and get to that house first before the developer does. But if not, let's not limit what they can do. And this tax is outrageous, in my opinion.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you all. Okay, next.
Next three are Steve Elder, Jess Larson, and Shelley Oilier. And they'll be followed by Jane Leo, Tom Karwacki, and Mary McMurray.
Welcome.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, members of the City Council. My name is Steve Elder. I live in Northeast Portland. I wish to just maybe amplify and say amen and hoorah to some of the things that I've heard and boo to some of the things that I've heard, other things that I might have heard. I do support the recommendations of the United Neighborhoods for Reform. I also point out, I think that the mayor was very wise in saying that the tax, if any, needs to be calibrated. That is to have some rational basis. It was my understanding that originally that was $250,000, and it was considered that a fair tax would be a tithe of that. $250,000 being the difference between, or being a number for the base price of the house that was demolished and replaced, and the other one of the revenue realized from the replacement house. Okay, I think that $350,000 is a better index. I would yield to economists on that subject, but I do agree with the mayor that it should be calibrated, and it can be calibrated. I would also point out to the to Ms. Kincaid, who was talking about, she said that, well, development, you know, DRAC wasn't consulted. And I would submit on that issue that it's all about, you know, everything, you know, she says everything that involves development. If the city council waits until every aspect of development is satisfied and chewed on and debated and deliberated, there won't be any houses left. Because every bureau of the city has something to do with development. I'm urging the council to do something. I think that what's before the council is acceptable right now. That's what I'm asking the council to do. Also, to the gentleman who spoke about energy efficiency of old houses versus new houses, I would ask, you know, how many tens of years is it going to take to recoup in terms of energy efficiency? Yes, it's relatively more efficient, but how many years more is it going to take to actually recoup the best, you know, the best, most affordable house is the house that's on the ground now. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Jess Larson. I'm the director with Welcome Home, and we are pleased to see this policy coming before you for your consideration, and we've supported this concept from the beginning. We appreciate your work, Mayor, and your staff's work to look for new tools to help fund affordable housing and to mitigate the affordability crisis in our community, and we see this as potentially one of those tools. So we agree it needs work. We have three remaining concerns with the existing policy, what we've called the one-wall loophole, and wanting to make sure that what is a demolition is taxed for being a demolition. We're concerned also about the rebate strategy for affordable developers who have to carry that cost while they wait to develop the property. And then most especially the change for the 1-for-2 exemption. We agree that density is part of our affordability solution in our community. We absolutely need to be promoting density, though in many of these cases, the demolition of one home replaced by two much larger, much more expensive homes is still an impact on the lost affordability of that original home. So we'd like for your further consideration on that and the other items. And finally, just to say that this is yet just one additional tool for our toolbox, and it is only one step in addressing the problem of demolitions also. So let this not be the end of your work on demolitions, and let this just be the beginning of your work on new affordable housing funding tools, because we have much further to go. Thank you.
Welcome.
Hi, my name is Shelley O'Lear, and we have been the owner of an old home built in 1892 with a 1910 addition that added a bathroom. We have spent the last 10 years working on our house and our yard, loving our neighborhood and our neighbors in North Portland. Although our house doesn't appear derelict from the exterior or the interior, because we've done a lot of work, there's a lot of needs for the backbone systems of the house. Upgrading our heating system and replacing that 1962 furnace that's sitting in the basement. Increasing the size of the water line so that we can actually add a dishwasher to a kitchen, like something like that. And insulation and upgraded wiring. And then the big ticket item is actually lifting the house and repairing and replacing portions of the foundations. We'd also like to add a bathroom upstairs where the bedrooms are, and then move the washer and dryer from an enclosed porch, like actually inside the house. All of these are important because we're welcoming a new baby into the house, and having all these things done would be really great. What we've learned through our planning and our financing is all these improvements are of a high cost, and they don't add a lot of value to the property. So therefore, our down payment has to be higher because the loan-to-value ratio is lower. And with our existing down payment, we've from our financing people, they say, hey, you can go and tear down your house and buy and build a modest new house at actually cheaper. Now we're really considering replacing this house we've spent a lot of time working on, you know, to have an energy efficient house that has lower energy bills, utility bills, none of those surprise maintenance costs when you open something up and it cascades in an old house, something that we could live in long term and know that it's going to be sustainable for our family, and something that we can afford now with the payment that we've had saved, that we've saved over many years. The proposed additional demolition charge, if applied to a homeowner such as us, would price us out of our house replacement and would not make those other improvements any cheaper or affordable for us to do. A new foundation costs $10,000. The replacement foundation costs $40,000. That's just the name of the game. So one of the things that I would really like you can consider is an exemption for individual homeowners that have been living in a house for 5 years or more that are facing these kind of trade-offs. We really want to stay in our neighborhood, and this is by adding the demolition tax that would remove one of the really important options for us to be able to stay in our neighborhood long term.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thank you all. Okay, we have some more.
Seven more. The next three are Jane Leo, Tom Karwacki, and Mary McMurray. Okay. And they'll be followed by Jack Bookwalter, Jim Howell, and Randy Sebastian.
Jane, I think you're on first.
Great. For the record, I'm Jane Leo. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Portland Metropolitan Association of Realtors, 150 Southwest Harrison, Portland, 97221. In looking over this ordinance at its first run and understanding that this is more of a work session mode, I'd like to just offer comments for the consideration as this moves forward, because if this was indeed something you were going to vote on, I would be asking that you remand it back for further work. So we are concerned about the impact of this ordinance on housing affordability. We are very concerned at what the median price is for individuals to afford in the city of Portland, and also recognizing that you are a landlocked community. You cannot add more land. You have to accommodate the people who are coming here, born here, who want to stay here. And so we do ask that you consider the housing affordability and not create hindrances to demolitions when they are warranted. To the previous testimony that was provided, one of the concerns I do have is on the owner rebuild or the owner doing what is determined to be defined as a major remodel such that they can continue to age in place. And that major remodel may occur when that person is 40 years old, but they do it with the eyesight to stay in that place in that home until they're 80. That's going to take a different footprint than perhaps what already exists. I do look at situations. Most of you know Mike Burton from various lives. Mike owned a house in Northeast Portland. It was one of those big Portland homes, but it sat on two tax lots. When you look at the tax lots in Southeast and Northeast and North Portland, they are platted very small lots, and often you have one house in the middle. If that house is determined that it is a teardown, then it should be allowed to have two houses replace it and not have the $25,000 as proposed apply to both housing units. The rebate, we are concerned of its impact on the your low-income builders. Also, the fact that they would have to finance that money up front and carry those costs while the city bears administrative costs of cutting the check back. There is a staff cost to that, a budgetary cost. I do ask in setting a number on if there is to be a value number set on the demolition, that consideration be given to bifurcating the unit, the price of the housing unit from the price of the land in determining that. I also have concerned under the current language of the amount of authority given to the director of the Bureau, and that there's nothing in here that asks that it be reviewed by the your housing committee, your planning commission, your sustainability committee. In closing, I do want to say that I think it's disingenuous to show pictures of homes that were taken down and rebuilt. On a personal note, I do a lot of work as a team leader with Rebuilding Together. I have been in houses in Southeast Portland, Northeast Portland, North Portland, and most recently on Southwest Martha. Those homes, when those individuals move out, should be taken down. Those homes, when we leave them, are beautiful. They look great in pictures. But when you get inside, there's no insulation. There's barely a window. It's knob and tube. There's asbestos. There's radon. There's lack of insulation. You know, and I put this akin to, it's a little bit like when you're all dating. Guy can look great from the outside, but once you sit with him for a while, you don't want to be there. So thank you for considering my comments.
Hey, Tom, top that.
Not going to ask you out for a date. Tom Karwacki, Vice Chair of the University Park Neighborhood Association, Chair of the Land Use Committee. UPNA has had 14 demolitions this year, and on the heat maps that the BPS has provided, we're one of the hottest spots in the country, in the city over time. In addition to that, we've had 10 major addition and lot line adjustments. Now, let me just tell you on the major additions, that permit isn't issued until at least 35 days or so of notice. I've had 5 notices this month that there will be additions. So the permit numbers they were given might be a little after the fact. Our big concern is at the board meeting on Monday, we took a position against this amended we like the idea of a demolition. We love the goals. The issue is, all the concepts that Restore Oregon has identified, but our concept was the 2-for-1. That was a real problem with the line splitting because it will encourage line splitting, and we didn't want to create an incentive for line splitting, and that's the purpose of why I'm here today. We didn't want you to incentivize the demolition of houses. We're having houses right now being marketed by realtors to split into 3. So there's issues of real line splitting, and that's a real concern within the community. We've just started our voluntary design guidelines, which will go before the general meeting on the 26th of October. So since you're opening up the chapter, I would only come back to the same issue we had with surplus property, and that is that the notices of demolitions be provided in additional languages subject to using the same process that was submitted for surplus property, dealing with O&I determining the right languages in that community, so that the neighbors of demolitions actually are notified in the language they can understand, and that any posting be done in a similar fashion.
Follow up with one question. Because your neighborhood association abuts or includes within its boundaries a campus, a
correct,
college campus under a condition.
7 of those demolitions were for multi-unit housing afterwards.
So are some of those, and they are along the main stretch?
Along Willamette.
So they were demolished to make way for dorms or something?
That's correct.
And do you have a specific set of concerns about those different from other demolitions in your neighborhood?
No, we actually our concerns are totally different. That was part of the master plan, and the neighborhood completely agreed with those demolitions and, in fact, wrote a letter in agreement and supporting those demolitions for that dorm because that was consistent with the master plan adopted by the city.
Okay, thank you.
But we'd love to see a new language for making sure everyone knows that the notice of demolition is actually in languages they can understand, just like the closed captioning is up here.
I just referenced that this morning. We discussed the citywide trails plan, and I mentioned your suggestion on that. So that's going to be done in the citywide trails plan, and I think that I'm hoping it's going to become a norm. So thank you very much.
So once you open up the code, you can do whatever you want with it.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Mary McMurray. Hi, commissioners. I live in North Portland in the Humboldt neighborhood, and I'm really happy to be bringing up this subject because I do support the position of the United Neighborhoods for Reform on the fact that there should be a fee on demolition, and I also think that there should be rebates, and it's a very complex issue, as you all understand at this point. And I brought a little visual aid. I'm not sure if any of you, saw this in the news lately, but but as of a month ago, this home, this home was in Eastmoreland. It had been there for a long time, 92 years. Developer came and bought it. That's what's happening now. It's probably all gone now. And they're going to be putting up several of these, at least two of these buildings, which have nothing to do with good architecture or resemblance to existing Portland architecture. So I just wanted to bring this as an example of things that we should consider in, you know, in putting forward these kind of regulations. There are a lot of good architects in Portland, and I think that in a situation like this, one or two other smaller homes could have been added to this lot without taking away too much of the landscaping or and in a similar kind of style. And in that way, increase the infill goals, but without such a terrible loss to the neighborhood and a loss that's going to include fairly hideous new buildings that probably won't last 50 years. So that's what I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thank you all.
Okay. The next three are Jack Bookwalter, Jim Howell, and Randy Sebastian. And the last person who signed up will be Kathy Austin.
Which of these books come? Okay. I'm Jack Bookwalter, a resident of Northeast Portland, and I want to commend the council for considering this this tax. I want to praise Mayor Hales for bringing it up. I think it's one step and one tool of many to curb the demolition epidemic. I'm glad that it's being discussed. It's a necessary thing. It's a progressive thing. It's the Portland thing. I'm glad it's being discussed among other things to curb demolition. As good as it is, I agree with other people like UNR who have said that it needs some revision. Particularly items like the amount, the fee amount is probably is low. I would agree more with UNR. 35 is a more realistic number to 35,000 to curb demolition. It may not be the ultimate number, but it's a good start. I also feel that getting rebates for a 2-to-1 demolitions and rebuilding will probably only add fuel to the fire of demolitions in Portland, and we'll be losing even more of our affordable housing. However you want to define affordable housing, I think we'd have to admit that the house that goes down is more affordable than the one that's one or two that get rebuilt. I also want to say just quickly that I've heard comment here about we should be tearing houses down and replacing more energy efficient housing because it's better for the environment. But actually that is really a very penny-wise and pound-foolish thing to do with the environment. The greenest house is the one that's already there, no matter how much more energy efficient the new one is. We can never get back the embodied energy that's in the house that goes down, nor the materials and workmanship that's gone into it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Jim, welcome.
Hello, my name is Jim Howell. I live in Northeast Portland, in Jack's neighborhood. I'd like to address the two issues that you're trying to deal with. One is the preservation of the neighborhood character, and the other is the increase in affordable housing. I oppose this tax because I don't think it does either. If you have enough money to build a big, to tear the house down, the extra $25,000 is not going to be a main issue. And if it's increased, well, you're not going to get any money for affordable housing because you won't collect any. There's other unintended consequences. For example, what constitutes a derelict house? A developer could buy a house that's perfectly good and just let it vacant for 6 months to a year, so leave it unlocked, don't cut the grass, and pretty soon it's a derelict house. And that could happen as an unintended consequence of this.